January 20th, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again. The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer.
Shortly before 9/11, the Bush administration was quoted as saying that what they really needed was a Pearl Harbor type event. And then, when the president got some warning that there might be a terrorist attack on American soil, he did nothing. Then, shortly after the terrorist attack happened, that's when the country began folding in on itself. I'm convinced that Trump is planning a terrorist attack, or at the very least planning on ignoring a terrorist attack, and he's looking for the Reichstag fire. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 195. My name is Melvin. Thank you for being here. I'm so glad you're there on the other side of this line. Let's talk. So, hopefully, I have your attention. This guy is planning a terrorist attack. Can I make a case for that? You're damn right I can make a case for that.
Steven Mnuchin, Trump's pick to lead the Treasury Department, is defending his handling of thousands of foreclosures during the height of the financial crisis.
I have been maligned as taking advantage of others' hardship in order to earn a buck. Nothing could be further than the truth.
Mnuchin says he worked hard to help homeowners refinance so they could keep their homes.
That was just several weeks ago when we were only being warned about Steve Mnuchin, who used to work for One West Bank and who used to work for Goldman Sachs. You may remember, during the campaign, Trump spoke out a lot against Goldman Sachs. But here he is, putting Goldman Sachs, now seven people who used to work for Goldman Sachs, now work for his administration. And this week, Steve Mnuchin officially became the Treasury Secretary. He's now in charge of a lot of our fiscal policy in the United States. And it's not as though we the people did not make our voices heard. Remember that clip at the beginning? He said,
"This is the day, January 20th, that the people, America, the American people, this is your country, run by you."
And then he picks all of these guys that are the complete anti of that. And we tried. We called, we showed up, we did everything in our power to try to see to it that DeVos and Mnuchin and Price and Pruitt and all these guys weren't going to get confirmed. And yet they still got confirmed. It's almost like he's not listening.
He had lived in our house 25 years. John got sick with cancer. Then the bank foreclosed on us. We did everything the bank asked. They lied to us and took our home anyway. John spent his last days terrified I'd be homeless. And then they kicked me out right after the funeral. Steve Mnuchin ran the bank that committed fraud and took our home. And now Donald Trump has nominated him to run our economy as Treasury Secretary. We can't let that happen.
That was an ad that was being run while Mnuchin was being considered and while his hearings were going on. And even with stuff like that, Mnuchin never had to pull his nomination. And the Trump administration kept pushing him as the best way. This is the guy. How long? How long until we get another crash because of these guys? And the Democrats, our Democratic senators, they heard from us about this guy for sure.
Under Mr. Mnuchin, One West churned out foreclosures like Chinese factories churned out Trump suits and ties.
That was Merkley, Senator Merkley from Oregon. And even with all the protest and all the outrage and all the speaking against Goldman Sachs that he did, he still made this guy Treasury Secretary. It boggles the mind. I've made the case for some time that what Republicans are really trying to do is they're trying to destroy all of the things that you put them in charge of. They're not really there to make them better or fix them in any and all the rest. And Steve Mnuchin, when he was confirmed, actually said he's looking forward to making America great again. This is just a slogan that means absolutely nothing. So who else was confirmed this week? Tom Price.
You believe it is appropriate for a senior member of Congress actively involved in policymaking in the health sector to repeatedly personally invest in a drug company that could benefit from those actions, yes or no?
Well, that's not what happened.
It's true that the Democrats were trying to slow walk quite a few of the president's nominees, but with this guy in particular, it looks like he's making money on the very industries that he's going to be helping regulate, the industries that he's going to be working with. If you are doing insider trading, remember, this is the thing that Martha Stewart went to prison for. And so the Democrats said, hey, we'd like to know if you're making money off of these companies that are going to get rich off of these policies that you would be pushing as the Health and Human Services Secretary. And he said that that wasn't going on and he's not turning over any of his papers.
There's no quid pro quo. There's no conflict of interest. Everything is just fine. And then the Republican senators raised hell. We need this guy in there.
Who the hell is Tom Price? Tom Price is the guy. Remember the 60 or 70 times that the Republicans voted to repeal Obamacare? Tom Price was the guy that wrote the bill every time. And I remember a number of years ago, and this was when the health care bill was being debated, and the Republican House was holding a party. You know, just the GOP House members all getting together, chit-chatting, talking about how much they hate the country and all the rest. And Obama decided to show up to their party. He wanted to hang out with them. He wanted to talk with the other side. And Tom Price and then President Obama came face-to-face. And what their conversation became very famous after that.
You have repeatedly said, most recently at the State of the Union, that Republicans have offered no ideas and no solutions, in spite of the fact.
I don't think I said that. What I said was, in the context of health care, I remember that speech pretty well. It was only 2 days ago. I said, I welcome ideas that you might provide. I didn't say that you hadn't provided ideas. I said, I welcome those ideas that you'll provide.
President, multiple times from your administration, there have come statements that Republicans have no ideas and no solutions. In spite of the fact that we've offered, as demonstrated today, positive solutions to all of the challenges we face, including energy and the economy and health care.
Tom, I have to say that let's just take the health care debate, and it's probably not constructive for us to try to debate a particular bill. That this isn't the venue to do it. But if you say we can offer coverage for all Americans and it won't cost a penny, that's just not true. You can't structure a bill where suddenly 30 million people have coverage and it costs nothing. It can't just be political assertions that aren't substantiated when it comes to the actual details of policy. Because otherwise, we're going to be selling the American people a bill of goods.
And this is what's by and large happening with Republicans right now. They're trying to govern by slogan. So now Obama's out of office. Trump is in office. The Republicans have their chance to repeal and replace. They control both houses, and yet we're seeing nothing. Now, they can try to say that it's the Democrats trying to stop them on this particular bill, but it's not. They don't have a solution. They didn't have a solution then. They're good at destroying things. They're good at stopping things. They're good at ruining people's lives, but they're not great at governing. And that's not a bug. That's by design. One of the provisions in Obamacare is that you cannot charge women more for healthcare. Women, because of their reproductive systems, they tend to need more healthcare than, say, men do. So women cost a little bit more to insure. And Obamacare said that you cannot charge them more because they're women. When confronted with this, Tom Price was as classy as ever.
Obviously, one of the main sticking points is whether or not contraception coverage is going to be covered under health insurance plans and at hospitals, and whether or not they're going to be able to pay for it, especially for low-income women, right? I mean, I guess, where do we leave these women if this rule is rescinded?
Bring me one woman who's been left behind. Bring me one. There's not one.
Remember, Tom Price is a rich white guy. All of these folks are rich white guys. Yeah, but what about HUD housing? What about the defective? Yeah, fine. Okay, whatever. By and large, they're rich, white, out-of-touch men with conflicts of interest as far as the eye can see and who are just, much like the president, just trying to make a buck on this kind of thing. So Trump has one of the smallest victories ever, electorally. Honestly, this week he tried to say that it was the biggest since Ronald Reagan. Actually, every president, just about every president, with the exception of George W. Bush, has had a larger margin in the Electoral College. And then, of course, he famously lost by 3 million votes. Understanding that, by and large, the country is not with you. Not with you at all. And with your poll numbers going through the floor, usually this is the time when presidents, newly elected presidents, are trying to shore up support. They're trying to get support from senators,
House members, governors, the media, and of course, the people that did not vote for them. Obama very famously, after he was elected, said, "Hey, I understand not everybody voted for me. If you voted for me, thank you. If you did not vote for me, I'd still like to hear from you because I'd still like to work with you." And this president, and I've got a clip here from Michael Beschloss, who is a presidential historian, this president is doing everything he can to completely ignore the other half of the country that does not want him to be president. The other half, which by the way, is growing by leaps and bounds, and before you know it, is going to be 75% of the country. But it doesn't matter, because he's going to keep only listening to that tiny sliver of Americans who voted for him and who will back him no matter what.
He threw this away because what a president usually uses a transition for is to say to people who didn't vote for him, "I'm better than you think. I'm going to make appointments that you may like. I'm going to say things that you like. You know, I want you to give me a new chance." Instead, what Donald Trump said essentially was, you know, "I'm not going to sort of pretend to do that. I'm going to put out tweets. I'm going to be combative. I'm going to strike some people as impulsive." And a lot of people who might have been open to persuasion decided that they did not like Donald Trump. And so you find this odd situation where, you know, he won the popular vote, high 40s. These numbers of these polls are saying, you know, high 30s. That means that some, if they're reliable, some people who voted for him are walking away.
And so he's picking all these people that are the complete anti of the offices that they're going to be working for. He's not trying to talk to the people who did not vote for him. Even now, he's holding campaign rallies. Still, he's been president for over a month and he's still holding campaign rallies. And he's tweeting to his people, "Do this, do that, go after this person," still only talking to them. So what the hell is he doing? He's not trying to get any support. And he's still only talking to the nitwits and morons. What is he doing? I would submit to you that he's planning an attack. The Bush administration wanted it because when there was a terrorist attack on 9/11, it gave them an unbelievable amount of power. And they didn't waste even a little bit of it. They used it to do whatever they want. Strip you of your freedoms, listen in on your phone calls. And Trump would very much like to have that kind of power. And what he's looking for now, as he's shoring up his base, as him and Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon are cuddling up to the white supremacists, making sure that they stay firmly in Trump's corner, the Trump administration isn't looking to carry out a terrorist attack themselves. But they are very much looking forward to turning the other way when they see that one is about to happen, so that after it happens, he can step in and take as much power as he wants. Quoting here, on February 27th, 1933, the German parliament, that was called the Reichstag building, burned down due to arson. The government falsely portrayed the fire as part of a communist effort to overthrow the state. Using emergency constitutional powers, Adolf Hitler's cabinet had issued a decree for the protection of the German people on February 4th, 1933. This decree placed constraints on the press and authorized the police to ban political meetings and marches, effectively hindering electoral campaigning, a temporary measure. It was followed by a more dramatic and permanent suspension of civil rights following the February 27th burning of the Parliament building. Though the origins of the fire are still unclear, in a propaganda movement, the coalition government, the Nazis and the German Nationalist People's Party, blamed the communists. They exploited the Reichstag fire to secure President von Hindenburg's approval for an emergency decree, the decree for the protection of the people and the state of February 28th. Popularly known as the Reichstag fire decree, the regulation suspended the right to assembly, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and other constitutional protections, including all restraints on police investigations. Justified on the false premise and the communists were coming and planning an uprising and planning to overthrow the state, the Reichstag fire decree permitted the regime to arrest and incarcerate political opponents without specific charge, dissolve political organizations, and to suppress publications. It also gave central government the authority to overrule state and local laws and overthrow state and local governments. What we are going to hear is that this needs to be done for your protection. This needs to be done to secure our future. This needs to be done for you. The same stuff that we heard after 9/11, except we're dealing with somebody who is a hell of a lot more unhinged right now. Kevin Drum over at Mother Jones, the headline, "Waiting for a 21st Century Reichstag Fire."
Science fiction author Charlie Strauss has canceled all future trips to the U.S. Quote, and my worst case scenario, given the reshuffle of the National Security Council and the prominence of white supremacists and neo-Nazis in his administration, I can't help but wonder if the ground isn't being laid for a Reichstag fire by way of something like Operation Northwoods, in which case for me to continue to travel to the United States in 8 months' time would be as unwise as it would have been to plan in February 1933 to travel to Germany in September of that year. It might be survivable, but it would nevertheless be hazardous. We recently had Holocaust Remembrance Day, and Donald Trump refused to mention Jews. He refused to say the word Jews. And then when that was pointed out to him that he wouldn't say the word Jews, he goes, oh, it's all people. It's all people. We're here for all people. Recently, he held a press conference where he absolutely upside down and inside out berated a Jewish journalist. The Jewish journalist stood up and said, we're concerned about all of the hate crimes that are being committed against the Jewish people. And Trump stands there and he says, I am the least anti-Semitic person in the world, which, by the way, means he's the most. And then he says, and I'm the least racist person in the whole world, which clearly means that he's the most. Remember, we're dealing with 1984 type language right now. It's important to understand the history of this kind of thing. Let me say this right up front. I don't think Trump is Hitler. And I don't know that he's going to try to carry out the exact same kind of regime that Hitler carried out, or even that level of death and destruction that was carried out by Adolf Hitler. But what we are looking at is we are looking at an authoritarian strongman, very much in the mold of Hitler and Mussolini and Pinochet down in Chile. That is what we're looking at. And so when I read the history of this stuff, it's not to say that Trump is going to round up and kill 6 million Mexicans or Muslims, which I guess he could do because it would be completely within him to do it. But what I am saying is if you learn from these authoritarian figures in history, if you learn from their victories, however small they are, you'll get a better understanding of what this guy is trying to do. The resistances that are popping up all over the place right now are very much in his face. And it's making him, as he has said by his own admission, making it very hard for him to enjoy his presidency. And it's also making it very hard for him to get anything done. We are in the third week of February right now. He's been president for over a month, and he has signed two bills. Even up to this point, two bills. The third bill might be crossing his desk very soon, but he has signed two. This is when there should be a flurry of bills coming out of the House and Senate, where he's just signing his ass off, but he's not. So he is being slowed down, and I want people to understand why it's important to continue slowing him down until we can completely bring him to a full stop. Quoting here from an article over at the Daily Beast, Adolf Hitler was a minority choice to lead his country when he took office. Roughly 55% of Germans never voted for him. Anti-Semitism was prevalent in German culture, but by no means dominant or respectable. The nation's elites generally regarded the Nazi Führer with a disdain and mistrust and doubted his capacity to run a government, given his complete lack of experience at doing so. The consensus about the Nazis' wild-eyed promises was captured by the oft-repeated German proverb, "Nothing is eaten as hot as it is cooked." 6 years later, most Germans were acquiescent, and many of them were trying to benefit from the complete humiliation and dispossession of German Jews, their demotion to subjects of the Reich, and their forced expulsion from the country. 3 more years on, most Germans, including those elite corporate leaders and civil servants who scorned Hitler in 33, were not just turning a blind eye, but facilitating enslavement and mass murder and finding great many helpers in the Axis-occupied, Axis-allied regions of Europe. Power magnifies the ideas of those who hold it. Power enabled the Nazi regime to unleash the haters, to intimidate the squeamish, and to change the moral balance of prejudice from something frowned upon to something glorified as patriotic. Does any of this sound familiar? Once that happened, individual self-interest took care of the rest. Above all, power enabled the propagandists for Nazism to divide the world relentlessly into us versus them and to shut down more nuanced perspectives. In such an unforgiving environment, all means of self-defense were justified, including preemptively striking them.
taking their rights away, concentrating them in camps and ghettos, and wiping them out before they supposedly even had a chance to do their worst. The demonization of them is always the first step towards persecution and genocide. And an essential prerequisite for demonization is its proponent's self of victimization, of having been or being about to be robbed of your birthright. Consider the beginnings, and you'll become aware of the end. And right now, what's happening with my people that are protesting is they're being painted as violent and all these other things. And there's always going to be, with these peaceful protests, there's always going to be opportunists that step in and raise hell and do what they want. And then when you turn to the conservative media, the effective state-run media right now, what you'll hear is that you can't trust these people, you can't believe these people because these people are clearly violent and we need to stop them, right? This is what they're trying to say about progressives that are protesting Trump. Recently, white supremacist Milo Yiannopoulos was supposed to speak at UC Berkeley. And a riot broke out the night that he was supposed to speak. And of course, what happens with a riot, for somebody like him who's trying to sell a book, is it becomes an opportunity. Robert Reich teaches down at UC Berkeley, the famous economist who worked for the Clinton administration. And he said it was a peaceful protest. Then people came in with sticks and masks and started raising hell and setting garbage can fires. And he said those weren't the protesters. But when you turned on Fox News the next day, they said, there it is. Those leftists, they're violent, and they've got to be stopped.
People don't appreciate college. They don't appreciate opportunity. They don't understand it. And these people going into the workforce, these are the same people 20-somethings had showed up in Washington. They weren't pro-Hillary. They weren't even pro-Obama. They were anti-Trump and anti-American. They think they have a vision of America, but they have no sense of what America is. Not all of them, most of them. And a lot of them are drunk or high, I'm telling you. I looked in their eye and there's a lot floating around in there and it doesn't seem like retina juice.
That's Brian Kilmeade over on Fox News the next day, just raging, right? Not giving you the story about what actually happened. And saying, hey, we should just take their college away. Just take away their education. We shouldn't be listening to them. They're nothing but a bunch of violent anti-American nobodies anyway. Brian Kilmeade doing the work for the Fuhrer. Brian Kilmeade, also looking forward to the new Reichstag fire and sowing fear. If you turn on conservative media right now, it's fear. Fear of everything. Fear of the others. Fear of the Muslims. Fear of the Jews. This is happening a lot. Michael Flynn was to be national security advisor for President Trump. And Michael Flynn is a horrible anti-Semite, not just anti-Islamic, a horrible anti-Semite. And the white supremacist movement regarded him. I remember when he was picked. It was the first week, after Trump won in November. The first week, he picks Jeff Sessions, Steve Bannon, and Michael Flynn. And the white supremacist movement, they just start making out with each other. Oh my God. This is the greatest day ever for white supremacy. They love these guys. Because they're all anti-Semites. They're all racist. And they saw that this is the white homeland. Oh my God. Michael Flynn is a hero to these people. Michael Flynn had to step down this week because it appears that he might have committed an illegal act. Treason. Violating the Logan Act. And he had to step down this week. And the white supremacists were not too happy about it. This from Media Matters. Quote, neo-Nazi writers are upset that retired Lieutenant General Flynn has resigned from his position as National Security Advisor. The anti-Semites are lionizing Flynn as, quote, one of our best guys and a true patriot who has been quite critical of Jews in the past. They're also lamenting that his resignation is definitely a loss, .. to the Jews, and are speculating that he was pushed out by the more subversive elements in the White House. It was the Jews. Last July, Flynn shared a tweet that read in part, "Not anymore, Jews. Not anymore." He later apologized and claimed on Twitter that fear of Muslims is rational. Flynn also endorsed the work of racist author Mike Cernovich, who has frequently pushed white nationalist memes on his Twitter account, many of which he later deleted. Cernovich also claimed that diversity is code for white genocide. Blacks use guns for murder, whites use guns to kill themselves, and diversity is bad for national security. The Daily Stormer also said on their website that this is one of our best guys, and he was pushed out by the Jews. What's happening now is fear, tons and tons of fear
is being pushed not just from the White House podium, not just on the president's Twitter account, but over on conservative media. They're pushing everybody. They're saying, you got to be afraid. It's coming. You got to be afraid. We don't spend enough money on the military. We're not killing enough people. We've got to be afraid.
I need to know where the next attack is coming. I need to know the officers involved in ISIS. I need to know the imams putting out this philosophy, this diatribe. I need to know when the next attack is coming. And if I have somebody who's an expert at interrogating, like Jim Mitchell, I want to be able to use it. So here he is, Jim Mitchell, Cut 28.
We do have to look at the techniques and determine what is working. And I'm telling you, there's a handful of people out there who are the worst of the worst, who are highly committed to their cause, who have some catastrophic attack in mind, who are not going to pony up and volunteer information so that we can disrupt those attacks. So in my mind, it makes perfect sense that the president would ask his intel folks to revisit that.
You can turn on Fox News or conservative talk radio any minute of any day, and you'll hear those kinds of things. Pushing for war, pushing for fear, right? Trying to get people. Here's what they're doing. They're talking directly to their foot soldiers. Trump doesn't need the support of me or my friends and my family. He's simply trying to maintain the support that he has. And that little support that he does have, he's trying to get their backs up. He's trying to make them afraid. See, I don't buy into this kind of stuff. I'm not susceptible to this kind of fear. I'm not a snowflake. Conservatives, on the other hand, quite a few of those guys that backed him for president, they are. And they scare easily. And they're armed. I see open discussions on message boards all the time where these guys who own more guns, you know, then they have more guns than they have anything. And they're talking openly about killing people, you know, when the revolution comes and they have to defend themselves. Or they just can't wait to start mowing people down. And it's frightening. But the White House and conservative media, they're trying to keep their foot soldiers in line right now. The people that will ultimately do their deeds for them. See, no, Trump can't do this alone. Trump, Bannon, Kellyanne Conway, all these, they can't do this stuff just on their own. They're going to need a nation of millions of people to do it with them. And so this is what they're doing. They're keeping these people in line for them. Kellyanne Conway recently took to Twitter to continue shoring up more of that support. She spends more than a little bit of time talking with white supremacists over on Twitter. She thinks nobody notices, but we do. Josh Harkinso over at Mother Jones, the headline, Kellyanne Conway's white nationalist retweet is no mistake. The Trump administration's connection with far-right extremists continues. Quoting here, this recent Monday, coming off a long evening of responding to General Mike Flynn's resignation as National Security Advisor, senior Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway found solace in a tweet from a user named Lib Hypocrisy. Conway not only retweeted the image, but also wrote love you back and wished her hapless haters on and a happy Valentine's Day. But there was just one problem. Lib Hypocrisy is an explicit promoter of white nationalism and other bigotry. This is evident from the account's profile, which includes the hashtags white identity and nationalist. It also features a cartoon image of Pepe the Frog, the adopted mascot of the racist alt-right movement, and a shout-out to Geert Wilders, the far-right Dutch politician who wants to shut down mosques. Asked about her retweet of Lib Hypocrisy by BuzzFeed, Conway implied that she hadn't been in control of her account that night. Oh, it must have been somebody else. And she obviously had no idea who Lib Hypocrisy was adding. I denounce whoever it is, and those tweets are soon going to be deleted. Mother Jones has documented in multiple investigations since last summer other such mistakes of when her account was probably being used by someone else. That includes Trump failing to disavow support from former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke when he was asked about it repeatedly, and then later on, he blamed a bad earpiece. Trump appointing a white nationalist leader as a delegate to the Republican National Convention and then blaming a database error for the move. Trump tweeting an image of himself superimposed over a picture of World War II era Waffen SS soldiers and then blaming it on an intern. General Mike Flynn sharing a Never Hillary tweet that said, not anymore, Jews, not anymore. Trump twice retweeting at white genocide. Trump retweeting at Eustace Fash, fascist for fascism,
whose header image at the time also included the term white genocide. Trump tweeting an image of himself as Pepe the Frog. Trump tweeting an image of crooked Hillary superimposed over a pile of cash with the Star of David. Donald Trump's famous Skittles tweet. And then Trump tweeting blatantly false and racially inflammatory crime statistics. White nationalism has a direct line to the White House right now. And it's evident in what the president's doing. It's evident in what Kellyanne Conway's doing. It's evident in what Steve Bannon's doing. They're just trying to keep these people in line. So when the Reichstag fire happens, they can gather all these people together and get all their guns and then get all their people, right? And they can tell us why they need to dissolve political parties. They need to tell us, and then they'll tell us why we can't have elections, and then why we can't have a free media, and why we should only be listening to the president and nobody else. Like with anything that this president or his administration does, it's not just about the power. Yeah, they'd like to strip you of your rights and your freedoms and your free press and all this stuff and your free speech. They want to strip you of all that stuff, but there's always an opportunity for them to make money as well. So how are they going to make money off of this particular event? I mean, they can strip us of all this stuff, but that's going to make them some money, but that might not make them the kind of money that they're looking for. What could they be trying to get? What could they be working towards where they could make tons and tons and tons of money? And by the way, the president is not supposed to be using his position. The people that work for him not supposed to be using their position to make money in the government. But this guy can't stop himself.
The old expression, to the victor belong the spoils. You remember I always used to say, keep the oil. I wasn't a fan of Iraq. I didn't want to go into Iraq. But I will tell you, when we were in, we got out wrong. And I always said, in addition to that, keep the oil. Now, I said it for economic reasons. But if you think about it, Mike, if we kept the oil, you probably wouldn't have ISIS because that's where they made their money in the first place. So we should have kept the oil. But, okay. Maybe you'll have another chance. But the fact is, should have kept the oil.
He says this, and he says this a lot. And after they get all the power that they want in the country, and they drag us back into another war, this president has already said that he's going to put troops on the ground in Syria. And there's a lot of talk right now about how the military isn't big enough, how the military isn't powerful enough, how they don't have enough tanks and bombs and guns and how they need more. And there's a ton of talk still going on about taking oil from the Middle East. Sean Spicer was asked about this.
On a statement that the president made on Saturday, can you, and I just want to clarify your answer here.
Yeah.
Can you unequivocally state that this administration will not send more troops into Iraq to, as the president has put it, take the oil?
I'm not going to talk about what we may or may not do. I think the president's been very clear that he doesn't telegraph forward what taking options off the table. That's not a good negotiating skill. That's not how he works. There's a reason he's been successful at negotiating is because he does it in a way that doesn't telegraph to people what he's going to take on or off the table.
He's not a good negotiator, and he's not negotiating. He's not great at it. And by the way, he has said openly that he plans on taking the oil. And in Iraq, they can hear him. And they are already freaked out about the fact that he's going to invade their country and take their oil because he is openly saying that that's what he wants to do. There is an ad running in Iraq right now, and I'm going to play the audio for you. It's got the subtitles are in Farsi because all of the clips from the president are in English. But this is an ad that's running in Iraq right now because they're afraid that this guy is going to come in there and bomb the hell out of their country to take this natural resource.
Their armies are wiped out. They have weak armies. It's a corrupt society anyway. I mean, it's totally corrupt what's going on over there. So I said very simply that if it's me, we take the oil.
I said, if we leave, it'll take the oil. At least pay us back. And I come out front page news. Oh, Trump is a horrible human being. He wants to take the oil. From a sovereign country, sovereign. Give me a break. You see the people ripping off sovereign.
Wouldn't you be destroying the wealth of Iraq?
No, let me get, there is no Iraq. There is no Iraq. Their leaders
Iraqis
are corrupt.
Differ,
excuse me, there are no Iraqis. They're broken up into so many different factions.
How are we going to take the oil? How are we going to do that?
You would leave a certain group behind, and you would take various sections where they have the oil there.
So you would keep troops in Iraq after this year?
I would take the oil.
I don't understand how you would take the oil. Does that mean keeping troops there or staying involved in Iraq?
You heard me. I would take the oil.
There's no shortage of these audio clips saying that he wants to do this. He is broadcasting what his plans are. He's not being coy about it. He's telling us he's going to take the freaking oil. That's what he wants to do. And he's ramping up troops in Syria right now. And after he gets his Reichstag fire, and after he starts stripping people of their rights and gets what he wants and starts opening up the camps, and I know this sounds crazy, right? This sounds paranoid. But you have to consider the beginnings to resist the end. Good chance I'm dead wrong. Dead wrong about every square inch of this. And perhaps I even sound a little bit paranoid right now. But I'm not extrapolating something right here. I'm taking the president's direct words, and I'm saying he is coming for your rights, and he's going for their oil.
We have a case here where GOP is turning into the gas and oil party, where they send the attorney general from Oklahoma, who sued the EPA 19 times, to now take over the agency, which is responsible for protecting the health and the environment of the people in the United States.
And as much as they can, the Iraqis and a lot of the countries in the Middle East are already getting ready for us to invade, because we just elected a giant man baby who doesn't know what the hell to do with himself, but knows that he loves to kill things, that he loves to take things away, and that he loves to make money.
If you get into a ground fight like this one and you end up killing civilians, as it appeared to happen quite tragically, including some children, you're adding to the narrative that the Al-Qaeda forces there have of these Americans who drop from the sky and kill people in a village. And, you know, when the story's told there, the part about the Al-Qaeda leaders who were there, or the part about the intelligence you recover, is likely to be left out. So you have to go do that question that Donald Rumsfeld used to ask, which is, are we creating terrorists faster than we're killing them? And that's certainly a risk when you're doing this.
And the attacks have already began at home. There are hundreds, if not thousands, both reported and unreported hate crimes being committed every week. Not just against Mexicans and African Americans, but also against Muslims.
A businessman from Massachusetts is accused of attacking a Muslim airline employee at JFK Airport in New York. Authorities say he kicked her and said, "President Trump will get rid of all of you."
The United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. We have that here in America. And recently, a group of visitors went through there and noticed the poster pointing out the early warning signs of fascism. There's 14 early warning signs. And they started reading it, and they realized that it's exactly what's going on right now here in America. And so they took a picture of it, and it got hundreds of thousands of shares and retweets, and people realized that this is what's happening in America right now. The list, very short, but what you're about to hear is what's going on outside your window. Powerful and continuing nationalism. Disdain for human rights. This is hanging in the Holocaust Memorial Museum. Identification of enemies as a unifying cause. You mean like the Muslims or the Mexicans? Supremacy of the military.
Hey, our military's not big enough. We need more. We need larger.
Rampant sexism, controlled mass media, obsession with national security.
Everybody be afraid.
Obsession with national security, religion and government intertwined, corporate power protected. Anyone notice all those Goldman Sachs people that work for the administration now? Yeah, they're going to be writing laws now. Labor power suppressed. The president recently visited a Boeing plant in South Carolina. And the reason that he went there and gave a speech was because they voted to not unionize. They don't like unions. They don't like democracies. Not even a little bit. Disdain for intellectuals and the arts. And yeah, money for the arts is being cut out of the government budget right now. Obsession with crime and punishment. Though crime has been dropping precipitously for years, they're saying that it's the highest that it has ever been. Rampant cronyism and corruption and fraudulent elections. 3 million people voted for the other candidate. And yet we got this guy. And he's governing like no one else. like no one voted against him.
Better to get your news directly from the president. In fact, it might be the only way to get the unvarnished truth.
And we're hearing more and more of that. Don't listen to the media. You should only be listening to the president. Never mind that he's lying his ass off on a daily basis. Never mind he seems incapable of even telling you the truth. You should only be getting your information from him. And in getting all of the anti-Semites, you know, the white supremacists, the anti-Muslim people, the anti-gay, getting all these hate groups together, right, and making sure that they continue to support the president. And then, of course, the anti-Muslim groups are becoming one of the more prominent, one of the more powerful, because for them, they're Christian supremacists, and they see this as a religious war. Trump wants power, and he wants money, and so does everybody that works around him. But the people that are supporting him, they think they're doing the Lord's work. At the Texas Capitol every year, there's something called Muslim Day that's held at the Capitol. It says it celebrates Muslims. It says we're not afraid of Muslims. But every year, there seems to be a disturbance from people who, well, let's just call them what they are. They're Trump supporters.
The Texas chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations celebrates the 7th Texas Muslim Capitol Day. We are honored. Thank you.
I proclaim the name of the Lord Jesus Christ over the capital of Texas. I stand against Islam and the false prophet Muhammad. Islam will never dominate the United States, and by the grace of God, it will not dominate Texas.
Those are his foot soldiers. Those are the people that are going to be working for him. Those are the people that he's going to be calling on after he has his Reichstag fire. This situation is creating strange bedfellows as well. Anyone remember Evan McMullen? Yeah, the GOP guy, right? It looked like he might win one of the states that Trump eventually won. If I'm not mistaken, it was Utah. Well, even McMullen is beginning to run ads against the sitting president.
The president has a secret. What is it? It's the reason Donald Trump always puts Vladimir Putin first. Why Trump insults and abandons our allies, but basks in Putin's praise. Why he compares American intelligence officers who protect us to Nazis and covers for Putin's attacks on our democracy. He hides connections to Russians, and troubling stories keep coming. Is Donald Trump compromised? How can you trust him if he won't come clean?
Even over at Fox News, not every single person at Fox is going for this line, right? Is not okay with being state-run news. Shepard Smith is one of the voices over there who speaks out with some regularity when he sees that something is wrong. And when it comes to Trump and his administration and the way he's talking about the media, and with Shepard Smith being a member of the media, Shepard Smith is speaking out. He's not having it.
Further, President-elect Trump today told CNN's Jim Acosta that his organization amounts to fake news. CNN's exclusive reporting on the Russian matter was separate and distinctly different from the document dump executed by an online news property. Though we at Fox News cannot confirm CNN's report, it is our observation that its correspondents followed journalistic standards and that neither they nor any other journalists should be subjected to belittling and delegitimizing by the president-elect of the United States.
Shep Smith does that kind of stuff all the time. And still does it to this day. That one obviously came from after, you know, just after the election. So not everybody is unified, you know, with even all the folks, it would seem would be like, say, anyone that, you know, on right-wing radio, anybody on Fox News, it would seem like they're all with him. But you and I, as folks who are against this administration, against the awful things that they want to do, we're finding some unlikely allies, and that's really great. And then, of course, there's the good work that the ACLU is doing.
President Trump put profits over the Constitution on day one, when he didn't disgorge his business interests, when he didn't create a blind trust, when he pretended to be concerned about the Emoluments Clause and pretended to be concerned around the conflicts of interest. He disregarded the law. He disregarded the Constitution. So now we want to get any and all documents, and then we're going to follow that on, and both in this context and in other contexts, in immigration, in abortion rights, in freedom of speech, in civil rights. We're ready. We have to be.
And within 3 weeks of him becoming president, Time Magazine, which is not some left-wing rag, Time Magazine came out in favor of impeaching Trump. Quoting here, "It has been widely acknowledged that upon swearing the oath of office, President Donald Trump would be in direct violation of the Foreign Emoluments Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Tucked away in Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, it's Clause Number 8, it states, in pertinent part, no person holding any office of profit or trust under the United States shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Where Trump runs afoul of the Foreign Emoluments Clause is that first and foremost, he is a businessman with significant financial interest and government entanglements all over the globe. Indeed, as Norman Eisen, Richard Painter, and Lawrence Tribe stated at the Brookings Institution, never in American history has a president presented more conflicts of interest questions and foreign entanglements than Donald Trump. Moreover, Trump's business dealings are veiled in complicated corporate technicalities and lack transparency. The Trump Organization does or has done business in Argentina, Azerbaijan, Bermuda, Brazil, Canada, China, Egypt, Georgia, India, Indonesia, Ireland, Israel, Panama, the Philippines, Qatar, Russia, Saudi Arabia, South Korea, St. Martin, St. Vincent, Turkey, the United Arab Emirates, United Kingdom, and Uruguay. And while serving as president, Trump, through his interest in the Trump Organization, which he continues to hold, will continue to receive monetary and other benefits from these foreign powers and their agents. Examples of existing business arrangements that constitute violations of the Foreign Emoluments Clause include China's state-owned industrial bank and Commercial Bank of China is the latest tenant in a Trump Tower, and the state-owned Bank of China is a major leader to Trump. Trump's business partner in Trump Tower, Century City in Manila, Philippines, is Century Properties, which is run by Jose Antonio, who was just named special envoy to the United States by the president of the Philippines. Further, many Trump Organization projects abroad require foreign government permits and approvals, which amount to substantial financial benefits that also constitute foreign emoluments. Worse, the president has been taking the position that I'm the president of the United States and I can run my businesses 100% and that the law is totally on my side, meaning that the president, in his words, cannot have a conflict of interest. To address this unprecedented corruption in the Oval Office and this threat of our Constitution and our democracy, we believe Congress must move forward now with an impeachment investigation of Trump. More than a million people from across the country have already called for this, joining a new campaign launched after Trump took office. The president's possible conflicts of interest have become increasingly apparent. He swore to uphold the Constitution and he's already violating it. And the silence coming from conservatives that were concerned about President Obama violating the Constitution, their silence is absolutely deafening.
Did you even file one lawsuit? One lawsuit on behalf of those kids to reduce the air pollution in your state?
Why is the climate changing? I'm asking you a personal opinion.
My personal opinion is immaterial.
Really?
To the job of
you are going to be the head of the agency to protect the environment, and your personal feelings about whether climate change is caused by human activity and carbon emissions is immaterial?
The EPA is for all of the people of the United States, not just the fossil fuel industry of Oklahoma. What the American people are expecting here is that EPA doesn't turn into every polluter's ally.
Scott Pruitt has tried to sue the EPA out of existence. Scott Pruitt has filed hundreds of motions against him. Scott Pruitt has introduced laws into his state's legislature that were written by the fossil fuel industry. And this week, he was approved by the Senate to become head of the EPA. And within moments of him being picked to head the EPA, a bill was introduced to get rid of the EPA. This is true. H.R. 861, not the title, it's the whole bill. The Environmental Protection Agency shall terminate on December 31st, 2018. That's the entire bill. It will go to committee and then it will likely be voted on. And that was the point, to put someone in charge that destroys it. It's still full steam ahead for this administration.
As the Attorney General of Oklahoma, Scott Pruitt sued
the EPA 19 times on clean air, clean water, on soot, on mercury, right down the whole line. Eight of those cases are still pending before the EPA. So I asked Scott Pruitt today, would he recuse himself from any actions on any of those pending cases? And he said that he would not. I said that as long as those cases are pending, he's in a fundamental conflict of interest. He's the plaintiff, he's the defendant, he's the judge, and he's the jury. He has to promise the American people that he'll recuse himself as long as those cases are pending. He said that he would not.
So now they've got a plan to get rid of the EPA. They've also got a plan to get rid of the Department of Education.
An education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge.
It is absolutely not flush with cash. That is an absolute upside down and inside out lie. Fly. Full stop. But that didn't stop him from picking somebody who thinks that way, who believes that way, who will destroy the Department of Education.
Trust me, I'm like a smart person.
When Betsy DeVos went up in front of the Senate, it was one of the most embarrassing things that I have ever had to sit through. And eventually, she was picked. She was approved to be the head of the Department of Education, despite her performance.
You think if you were not a multi-billionaire, if your family has not made hundreds of millions of dollars of contributions to the Republican Party, that you would be sitting here today?
Have you ever managed or overseen a $1 trillion loan program?
I have not.
How about a $1 billion loan program?
I have not.
Okay, so no experience in managing a program like this.
I really wish we had a second round of questions.
And I think this is a real shame, this rush job, this inability to allow the public to see this debate.
I don't know what you're trying to protect Ms. DeVos from. She should get robust scrutiny. She's going to oversee the education of all of our kids.
And you said that student debt has increased by 1,000% since
980% in 8 years.
I'm sorry?
980%.
That's just not so. It's increased 118% in the past 8 years.
Well,
so I'm just asking, if you're challenging my figures, I would ask that you get your figures straight.
This kind of ignorance is not a bug. It's a feature. It's by design. And it's going to be a lot easier to control you, the American public, when you are far more ignorant. Far more ignorant because she is the head of the Department of Education. Far more ignorant because you stop paying attention to good, solid media outlets, and you instead only listen to what the president tells you. You only accept the news. News, I'm doing air quotes here, that comes out of the White House. And yes, within moments of her confirmation, a bill was introduced to eliminate the Department of Education.
One final question. Do you think that guns have any place in or around schools?
I think that's best left to locales and states to decide. If the underlying question is...
You can't say definitively today that guns shouldn't be in schools?
Well, I will refer back to Senator Enzi and the school that he was talking about in Wapiti, Wyoming. I think probably there, I would imagine that there's probably a gun in the school to protect from potential grizzlies.
If President Trump moves forward with his plan to ban gun-free school zones, will you support that proposal?
I will support what the president-elect does.
Amazing. So this is the way it's going down right now. They're trying to start as many conflicts as possible around the world for the purposes of military dominance and stealing the oil. They're sowing unrest here at home, shaking things up in D.C., as they like to say. And what happens when you shake things up? Well, you just make a mess of them. They're shoring up their support, securing the support of white supremacist groups so that they can have foot soldiers when the time comes, telling you not to believe your own lying eyes and ears and only listen to the Führer and to nobody else. These groups that they're trying to get behind them right now, or trying to get continued support from, make no mistake, these are his brown shirts. These are the folks that will do the dirty work for him. And they're getting rid of the Department of Education. And they're telling you that you should only pay attention President, maybe some conservative news sources, right? But nobody else.
Scientists are moving the minute hand of the famed nuclear doomsday clock closer to midnight, based on comments by President Trump and a darkening global security landscape. David Titley with the Penn State Center for Solutions to Weather and Climate Risk says the administration needs to address threats from climate change.
The United States, as a very first step, needs to make clear, unequivocal statements in the Trump administration that it accepts climate change. It's caused by human activity as a scientific reality. Alternative facts will not make the challenges of climate change magically go away.
And the doomsday clock is moving ever closer to midnight, thanks almost entirely to this administration. It's hard to say exactly what's going to happen. It's hard to say exactly how far this is going to go. Honestly, I thought far more destruction would have been done by this president by this time, because this is really when they get all their work done. All these House members and Senate members, they're going to have to spend next year running for office, almost the entire year. So when they get their legislative work done, this is when it gets done. But I want to say, we're having a real world effect right now. Yeah, some of his nominees are getting through, but he's not able to get a lot of laws through. And his Muslim ban was just overturned by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals down in San Francisco after Washington State decided to bring a suit against him, against the Trump administration. And quietly, very quietly, they withdrew that presidential directive. That executive order, they withdrew that. They didn't say anything about it, but they're not going back to court with it. So you got to understand, the work is hard, but we are making a difference, and we are winning. And we are not yet in that dystopian state that they're trying to drag us into. So I just want to say to everyone, keep calling, keep showing up, keep doing the work. It is actually effective. It is actually working. And then, of course, I would like to say this to you in closing. Perhaps after what you've seen can happen, perhaps after what you've seen happens when the wrecking crew is elected to come to town to destroy everything and leave nothing in its wake, perhaps after seeing that, you'll see how vitally important it is to turn out for the next election. So then maybe after the election, you can breathe a little sigh of relief. You don't have to worry so much. You don't have to piss your pants every time the news comes on because this horrible human being has done something horrible again. But for right now, you didn't turn out. You didn't do the work. And you didn't pay attention. Or if you did, but a lot of your neighbors didn't. And so this is where we're at. But it's not over yet. We're not done. We can still continue making an impact. But you've got to stay engaged. And you've got to stay out there. And you've got to stay in these representative faces. I'm with you in this fight. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint, but it's important work. We've got to get it done. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store or at Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are The Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a special thanks to you for listening.
Resist and continue to resist.
This is Melvin signing off, and now that I've woken you up, good morning.